And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Entertainment Live, 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. This is Top Gun, by the way.
Yeah, this sounds like a church procession song.
8-bit Top Gun.
Amazing.
Video game version.
And I'm Dave Isaac, alongside Joseph J. Erdo, Eric Reiner, Trisha in studio, and Top Gun is a fun situation. I just got a phone call. Can you believe it?
Yeah, well, and this hour is brought to you by...
It is brought to you by Arrowhead Wealth Management, the best at creating and protecting your wealth. So listen to founder and radio host Conrad Coggeshell, heard live every first Wednesday, at 11 a.m. on BTBN, Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network, and that's at breakradioshow.com. You can hear that, 623-888-3210, 623-888-3210.
And right now we've got on a great guest. We've had him on before and to talk about his previous film, COG. Remember that one?
Yes, I do.
Child of God. And right now joining us is director Kyle Patrick Alvarez from the new movie, The Stanford Prison Experiment. Thank you so much for joining us, Kyle.
Hey, guys. Yeah, thank you so much for having me back on.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I have seen The Stanford Prison Experiment, and I'm telling the Dave and Trisha and Eric that they need to go see this.
I know what it's about, so and it's very interesting,
yes.
So I would like to see that.
Yes.
It's on video on demand already. It came out on video on demand yesterday. It's going to open here in Phoenix next Friday, and everyone needs to rush out and see this movie. I will be giving my official review next week, but I'm going to tell you right now, I love this movie, Kyle.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely. And let me tell our listeners a little about it. You know, I think that the title kind of tells you a little bit, The Stanford Prison Experiment, but Billy Crudup plays a psychologist who selects 24 male college students to take on randomly assigned roles of prisoners and guards in a mock prison situated in the basement of the Stanford Psychology Building.
And it's a true story.
It is a true story.
And a true experiment.
Right, right. So, you know, Kyle, what intrigued you? I mean, I'm intrigued by it, but what made you know that this was such a good subject for a movie?
You know, it's weird. It's in some ways, it's inherently, you know, not a particularly cinematic story, right? It's like it's a bunch of people in a small room. It's a psychological study. There's elements of it that, you know, when people had tried to or did make movies, you know, kind of inspired by it before, they always raise the stakes more, right? It's always like older people, or they're shooting each other, or, you know, sexually assaulting each other. And what's so fascinating about the real experiment and what the writer Tim did is he looked at the real, all the raw footage, all the transcripts, all the, you know, the reality of what happened and said, hey, what happened here was actually fascinating enough. Like, this is an amazing story in and of itself. And so, you know, he set about creating the script that didn't change really any of the details. In fact, a lot of the dialogue, you know, you hear in that part of the experiment was taken straight from the transcripts. And so, excuse me, for me, I was excited about making a film that reflected that, where you would realize that we didn't have to dramatize or sensationalize any of it because the story itself was already so compelling.
Now, did you approach this film different than other films where you had to actually look at these transcripts and do a bit more research, and maybe they had film as well on this experiment?
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, my previous movies, two movies, you know, were based on memoirs. So, you know, it's the last film was David Sedaris, and memoir in and of itself is kind of a form of fiction in a way, right? You're looking back on something that happened and interpreting it through your lens. And so I felt those films, I felt a certain amount of freedom to make a fictional film based on someone's memoir. You know, I didn't feel the duty to cast someone that looked or sounded like the people, and those writers knew that. In this case, you're actually making a historical film. You know, you're making a film that you want to be able to watch and hopefully have it help enhance your understanding of the experiment. And so there's a stronger sense of duty of, okay, we need to stay truer to this. We need to, you know, we went and measured the basement of Jordan Hall at Stanford University and just rebuilt it down to the square inch. You know, we referenced all the costumes. You know, we really wanted it to hold up to scrutiny, where if you read about the experiment and watched all the footage and saw the documentary, when you watch the film, it could fit in with all those other materials.
Now, I haven't seen the film yet. I did see the trailer. I read some stuff on this. Fascinating, by the way. How did the purpose change, or did it change, originally when they did this experiment to what they learned at the end.
Without revealing anything, we don't.
Yeah, want to, yeah, don't, without spoiling. But is there, was it shocking to the original people that experimented with this?
Oh, for sure. And yeah, and talking about the film is, it's like a little bit like talking about Titanic. Like, you know, the ship sinks at the end. You know, it's a little bit like that. But he set out for it to be, you know, a demonstration. It was 10 years after the famous Milgram electroshock, mm-hmm. you know, a study. And he wanted to do those, you know, those were only over an hour period, and he wanted to do a longer term demonstration. So it was supposed to be 2 weeks. There was no anticipation. I mean, they anticipated to find some things, right? They had a hypothesis, they had an intention, but there was no sense that both the experiment and the effects it had on the people running the experiment would go get so intense and become so as vulgar and sort of evil as it did. There was no, I mean, that's sort of what's controversial. Everyone kind of says, well, of course they knew. Of course they knew it was going to be that way. And what I found so interesting, the more I read about it and got to know Dr. Zimbardo, because he was very involved in the process of making the film, there was no precedent yet. This hadn't happened. Now it's easy for us to look back on it and say, well, of course it played out that way. But there hadn't been anything like this before. No one had ever done it before. And since then, it changed, you know, sort of changed the field a lot in terms of the standards and practices and the ethics boards because of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I was glued to the screen while watching this, and I mean, just so riveted that the what it says about human nature, what the experiment says about human nature, what the movie says about human nature is just so fascinating and enlightening, and especially, you know, it's like that whole prison guard mentality and the cop mentality and the, you know, victim mentality. There's just so much just fascinating content substance in this film.
Now it's endlessly, you know, that's the thing. Even I've been involved with it for 3+ years now, and it's still every conversation, you know, after screenings or talks like this, you know, it still is, it's just an endlessly rich subject of conversation.
Mm-hmm. Now, this experiment actually took place in 1971, is that correct?
Yeah.
So what when you're saying that people are going, well, of course that's what's going to happen, which is what I was thinking. I was like, oh, everybody in psychology realizes. But if you look back and you say 1971, that just goes to show, I mean, that was, what, 44 years ago that this experiment happened. So even somebody my age, I just assumed that everybody would know that happened. But this was cutting edge back then. And then this project came about or was announced in 2002. And
oh, yeah. I mean, they've been trying to make this movie even longer than that. I mean, there's versions that, you know, Dr. Zimbardo, you know, was flown down, only a year later after the experiment to Hollywood. And, you know, they wined and dined him and they tried to make a movie then. And then they tried again in the 90s, actually with Leonardo DiCaprio. Before Titanic happened. And then this iteration is the one, you know, where Tim sat down and said, let's just go back to the source material. And so this iteration, yeah, started, you know, 13, 14 years ago.
So let me ask you this. How will this either change the prison system? Has anyone thought of, I'm sure everyone's thought about this, but it's a reflection probably and the commentary about the prison system out here in the United States, I suspect. And have prisons, some high-up management, seen this film, consulted with you about how to change things for the better?
Well, you know, I mean, Phil, I'll use Dr. Zimbardo's words here because, you know, he describes prisons. I mean, he has tried to be involved in prison reform. And, you know, he says prisons are some of the most secretive, closed-off, you know, parts of our country. We don't know what goes on inside of them. There's very little like regulation and oversight, and he certainly has tried, and he's hoping, you know, I mean, their timing couldn't have been more bizarre in that last week President Obama became the first president to ever visit a prison, and you know, so that's a big deal, and now he's starting to work on prison reform, and I know Dr. Zimbardo is trying to get involved with that. And trying to use, you know, all these years of research and understanding he's gained working on prison reform and trying to encourage prison reform and hopefully get involved with that, you know, on the level at the White House.
Well, and, you know, I want to take it even a step further, because what are we seeing right now with so many people who make law enforcement a career. They put on that uniform. When they first started out, they may have had a great idea of being, you know, there for truth, justice, you know, whatever. And yet perhaps what some of these people have morphed into goes along this same route of psychological metamorphosis, so to speak, that comes with being in that uniform, being in that position of power. What do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the problem is, and I'm, like, once again, stealing a lot of the doctor's words, but, you know, the problem is that when we look at the situation like that, police brutality, we want to look at that individual cop. And this is not to say that the individuals are still not responsible. They are. Then there should be accountability and all of these things. But the real solution is in the bigger, you know, what you know, Phil says, it's not the bad apple, it's the bad barrel. You know, it's the system itself. And, you know, one of the things the experiment shows is how powerful it is to human beings to don a uniform that gives you authority, carry a gun on you. By the way, plenty of countries, cops don't carry guns on them. And what that, imagine, look what this happened with these teenage kids over the matter of 6 days. Imagine that over decades of having this role, and where you're facing, you know, your job is, every day your job is putting your life on the line. And so, you know, I understand people should be angry for what's happening, but the real solution is in a certain amount of empathy, as you just described, a certain amount of understanding that, okay, wait, on the base level, there is a problem here, and there needs to be a better emotional training or psychosis. I mean, you know, I don't know the specifics in it. I'm just a filmmaker, but there's got to be a stronger sense of understanding of what people go through, what human beings go through when given that kind of unfettered power, that kind of absolute power over people. And it's obviously it's a dangerous thing, and it's becoming increasingly more and more relevant, at least in the media. I think it's kind of always been there. I think it's just we're seeing it now. The public is seeing it now more clearly, which I'm grateful for.
Yes, and once again, I want to remind our listeners that we are speaking with director Kyle Patrick Alvarez on behalf of the film The Stanford Prison Experiment, on a video on demand currently. It's going to be playing here in Phoenix beginning next Friday, and it is one of those movies that you're going to go see and you're going to be talking about afterward. I mean, you've got to see this with some, you know, hopefully intelligent people, that because on the ride home in the car, I mean, you're going to be talking nonstop. I mean, I kept thinking, you know, maybe cops need to, you know, there needs to be some simulation where the cops are the, you know, the criminals, and the prison guards are, you know, in prison, just because, like what you're talking about, the empathy. There definitely needs to be more empathy, especially that's especially clear after seeing this film.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. The more I start learning, and I'm learning more now after having made the film, you know, about the prison statistics in this country, the sort of mass incarceration that exists. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. It's a sort of inherently flawed system, and so many people that we imprison for long periods of time. It's for non-violent crimes. You know, we're talking for drug use and we put them in these systems that are really brutal. I think we need to step back a little bit and look at when we choose punishment over treatment. You know, and that it's a really, really fascinating thing when you see other countries. Something I thought about a lot while making the film, when you research other countries, the rare instances where they opt for rehabilitation and treatment over punishment, whether it's legalization of drugs and then putting all the money you fight drugs and putting that into treatment. And it does work. But I mean, it's one of these things I think history will keep on repeating itself. We can prove that this works, or that prisons that focus on education and reform and you know, that those systems work, and then people don't come back, as opposed to, I forgot the numbers, but it's a staggering percentage of people return to prison, and usually return for a worse crime the second time around. So that means, okay, inherently, you have to ask yourself, why do we do this? And I'm getting further away from the film than I'm maybe even comfortable discussing, but, you know, when you step back and be living in this for so long and speaking and trying to understand the psychology of what goes into these kind of the power, the roles of the guard and the prisoner, it's a really complex psychosis that goes along with it. And I think about the people who spend years in that system on both sides of things, and my heart aches.
Well, you know, when you said, "Who am I? I'm just a filmmaker," I'm sorry, but you are bringing this in front of the masses now. So people are going to be able to see this, and all of your efforts to keep the veritas, to keep this truth, and to really show it the way it was rather than sensationalizing it, because like you said, it's sensational enough on its own. And for you to have been able to take that, distill it down, and do such a wonderful job is going to bring this to the forefront and to the discussion of everyone, hopefully.
Well, I appreciate that. It's been a little, you know, the last couple of weeks now that the film is playing for everybody for the first time. It's sort of a realization that's dawned on me, and I say it with humility, that, and I think it's the timing, you know, I mean, we didn't anticipate how relevant it would be, not even just within the months or the year that we made it and released it, but within down to the days and the weeks. And you know, you realize then as a filmmaker, you do take responsibility for that. And I am grateful that the approach we took was to stay so true to it, because you can watch the film and it invigorates these thoughts or the kind of conversation we're having. And then when you go and look up the real thing and you can see all the photos and all the research, you go, oh my God, they didn't alter this to make it more entertaining, or the changes we made were relatively slight and always in the effort of actually encouraging the point of the story or the moral of the story. And the story is just so fascinating. I mean, they're really, what, you know, one of the guards donned this fake Southern accent inspired by Struthers Martin and Cool Hand Luke. And, you know, people watch the movie and they go, oh, well, that part you made up, right? That he puts on that Southern accent. I was like, no, that really happened. You can watch all the footage on YouTube. And, you know, the goal for us in making the film wasn't to replace that footage, right? So much exists for the experiment, but to enhance it by hopefully bringing you on the inside of it more, on a more emotional level. Because that's something a narrative film can do, that, you know, the footage that exists out there of this, it couldn't, because it's very grainy, old 1971 video footage, you know, and the audio is not good quality. And so there's this opportunity to make a film that can draw you into the and to understand the emotional capacity of it.
Yeah, like we talked about, this is greater than just the film. I mean, you're right, the timing's amazing. I mean, look what happened just, I think it was Dallas or just Texas, the other day, someone gets pulled over for not signaling a lane change and ends up dying 3 days later, apparent suicide, but they're still investigating that. You probably heard about that, where the officer, you know, appeared to me, at least it was a dash cam, where he intimidated her and ended up some massive physical altercations going on, and then ended up 3 days later she hung herself, apparently, you know, and they're still investigating that. But if you look at this film, I mean, I haven't seen it, but I'm just thinking there's probably a lot of educational, a lot of training ideas and therapy and treatment that can come from this film to everywhere, to prisons, to law enforcement, to prisoners, to, you know, to just general people, to gain that empathy. Is that how you see it too?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I believe that they do, even in police training, educate about the Stanford Prison Experiment, and have for a while. And, you know, we went and screened, Dr. Zimbardo and I went and screened the film in New York at a halfway house for ex-cons and, you know, trying to reintegrate into society. And it was a really kind of overwhelming conversation at the end, where you realize that I was speaking to men who had spent, you know, 30 years in prison, and it never leaves them. And the system itself is very brutal, and it's a really punishing system. And you kind of step back and you look, okay, well, wait, someone who's being jailed for nonviolent crimes, you know, it's a weird thing. And my mind is changing about, it has changed so much, about how we perceive punishment and how we, how our systems are engineered. Right. And that's why you want to make, I think that's why the story 44 years later is still fascinating to people, because there are these, you're not reaching that far to have this kind of conversation. It really was what was relevant then when the experiment happened and fascinated people is what's relevant now. And that was sort of the goal, was to make a film that stayed true to the experiment, but yet was still open enough that everyone's going to take something from, I think, what their experiences are, whether they've had experiences being imprisoned or being in jail, or whether they've had experiences where they've been given power and have lost their sense of self to having that power. You know, that was one of the things when I first read the script, I thought, okay, this movie's about these prisoners that went through this terrible thing. And then the more I got involved with it, I thought, wait, this is, as much as it's about that, it's also about these guards that shifted from their natural state so quickly. And there's something upsetting about that. And to try to look at those guards and not just damn them, but to say, okay, well, wow, there was this power that came over them that's stronger than their sense of self when given that kind of authority.
Well, and I found it interesting that even Professor Zardo, Zimbardo, that even he had some changes in personality during this process. And this is somebody who is a professor of psychology, you would think would have that foresight as to what could happen and maybe be able to nip it in the bud.
Oh, yeah. No, that was, you know, everyone goes, how could you have let this go on so long? And he goes, I let it go on way too long. I mean, he takes responsibility for it, which is something I find incredibly noble about him. But he goes, I was drawn into it just like everybody else was. You know, he tasked himself with being the superintendent of the prison. And so after a couple days, his mind wasn't, oh, okay, I'm a psychologist with empathy for these boys and I need to end this because they're going through this thing and it's getting worse and worse. His mind state was, I need to protect my prison. I need to make sure we hit all the things we hit every day. I need to make sure no one obstructs my prison, that my prisoners don't escape. You know, he took on his role just like any of the other guys did. And that was certainly a really fascinating part of the story that I had not been aware of until I, you know, read the script and started to get involved with it.
Yes, and, Kyle, we're going to kind of wrap it up here, but I do want to mention, I don't want you to comment on this because I know that we're kind of getting far from, we're talking about the experiment and not so much the film, but, I mean, there's just so much we could talk about. I mean, even, you know, probationers and probation officers, I mean, people, you know, it is just so rich in discussion. But, you know, I want to bring it full circle and ask you, for the Stanford's prison experiment, when I was watching it, I felt like I was watching a documentary. Not only with you know, just the way that you made the movie look, but the actors. These are recognizable actors. You know, these are people that we've seen in other movies. Ty Sheridan, Ezra Miller. I mean, Right. But they don't even look like themselves. They don't. I mean, was that amazing to you, the transformation of these, you know, these actors that we recognize their faces, yet we don't know them?
Oh, yeah. It was endlessly fascinating on set. Just even the period, you know, putting people in all the period hair and makeup. And, you know, at the end of some of these guys, you know, I only got to know, you know, I met once before we started shooting. And then you would see them at the end of the day, you know, out of everything, just in their, like, jeans and T-shirt. And you'd be like, wait, who are you again? I mean, so there was sort of the actual physical transformation that happened. And then being there, these were the most respectable, you know, our set was actually really controlled and really kind of actually a lovely set. Everyone really got along well, and we worked really hard to keep it really professional. But then when the cameras would roll, you know, these are really, they're young actors have an ambition in them, right? They have a drive because these are kids. A lot of them are kid actors. You know, a lot of them have been on Nickelodeon shows and you know, teen shows and Disney shows. And, you know, you let them and you give them this opportunity. Now they're 18 years old or 17 years old, and they're saying, I want to be an actor now. Before I was a kid and I enjoyed it and it was fun, but now this is something I really want to do and something I love. And then you give them this really intense material, and it was truly like a special thing to be a part of. That was the best part of making this film, was working with those guys and seeing them just absorb it and really commit so much to it. It was a really unique unique film to make that way, and they're just a great, really, really great group of guys and just the most talented people in the world that you're just lucky. I mean, it was an embarrassment of riches to have to get to work with so many great guys.
Oh, yes, yes. Once again, you know, I'm standing firmly behind, you know, this movie, The Stanford Prison Experiment. Everyone needs to check it out when it opens here theatrically next Friday. Again, you can also check it on video on demand. But director Kyle Patrick Alvarez, thank you so much for making this movie. We've talked a lot about how, you know, just the discussion and everything, you know, the intelligence, the enlightenment of this movie, but it's also very thrilling. So thank you so much for making an entertaining and enlightening movie, Kyle.
Thank you. I really appreciate it so much, and I hope you guys go check it out there in Arizona. I really appreciate it.
We'll definitely be talking more about it next weekend. I know that Dave's going to check it out, and we're gonna give our official review. You've already got a thumbs up, if not a breakthrough, from me.
Oh, well, nice. I really appreciate it, and I will. And thanks for having me on.
Thank you to Kyle. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Fascinating.
Yes.
I can't wait.
I know. Yeah, I think that you're really going to like the movie. I think you're going to have a good time. But wow. We need to take a break. So from Top Gun to Goonies. Of course, Goonies. Goonies, another Chris Columbus movie. Did you ever play Goonies, the video game?
No, but I've seen the movie Goonies.
Well, there you go.
And I used to rock out to this music.
They have this in my physician's office as well.
I love it. And this is Breakthrough Entertainment.
Are you going
live
to a pediatrician, Joseph?
1480 AM.
Yes, why? My name is Joey.
KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be right back.